Like, I use a kid volunteer in my show, and you never know what kind of kid you're going to get. But I always make sure that they volunteer, so they have to raise their hand. And
yeah.
So I don't force anyone on stage. And so I pick a kid, and, you know, this girl raises her hand. I'm like, okay, I'll use her. And she comes on and introduce her. And like, I've made kids cry before, you know, not on purpose, but, you know, they get scared. You know,
yeah.
Stranger is going to jump over them and whatever. And so here I am. She's about to throw. I'm up on my 12-foot unicycle now, and she's about to throw up the club. And all of a sudden, I notice this, like, little stream, this little river coming from where she's standing. And
oh, no.
I'm like, what's going on? And she was standing on, like, a manhole cover. And so at first, I'm like, oh, it's just, like, the manhole cover is, like, leaking water. And all of a sudden, I realized, I'm like, wait a second, that's coming from her. Like, she had a dress on.
Oh, no.
I didn't know what to do. I felt so embarrassed for her. And, like, what do you do in a situation like that? And, she didn't seem to mind. Like, it's not like she was crying or anything. She was still, like, I don't know if she actually knew what was going on. And, so I tried to, like, just ignore it, and I made her kind of step to the side so it wasn't as obvious. And,
oh my God.
She, like, throws up the club, and then she doesn't make it, and the club, like, lands back in her pee.
Oh, like, no. Oh.
She picks it up and throws it again, and I catch it, and, you know, I thank her. I give her the money I said I would, and she, you know, walks off stage, and I was just in shock. I was like, did that really happen?
Oh, brilliant. Alrighty, so that is Jamie Mossengren, unicyclist extraordinaire. If you know me, you'll know that unicycling has been a major part of my life. In 1993, I was the co-founder of the first British Unicycle Hockey League. But whenever I went to one of the Unicycle World Championships, or Unicons, as they're called, I was one of the thousands of fans. I was no longer the local expert, and I was there as a fan watching the really, really world-class unicyclists. And one of them was Jamie. I remember watching the Unicon 12 third-place unicycle hockey match in Japan in 2004. My team was knocked out in the early stages. His team was ended up in third place in the world, and their match against Vanni was extraordinary. 7-7 at regular time, and they won 9-7 after extra time. So, hey, Jamie, we crossed paths. All right, let's go and talk some more to Mr. Jamie Mossengren. In Singapore, were you performing outdoors?
I was, yep.
And was it really, really hot?
Really, really hot, yes. I don't know if I've ever had to work in those hot and humid conditions that bad before.
I mean, I remember when I was there, I remember doing shows and I would sweat so much that it would fall into my eyes and into my ears, so I couldn't even see or hear towards the end of the show.
Right.
And my hands would sweat so much that I couldn't hold on to the juggling clubs unless I pretty soon realized I had to wear, like, tennis players' sweatbands around my wrists or something to stop the sweat from getting right down to my hands. It was hard.
Yeah, I was just going to say that juggling clubs are a bit slippery, but, you know, you do what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah.
Luckily, the shows didn't start till later in the day, so, like, I think they started at 7.
Yeah.
And went till, like, 9 or 10, so it was maybe a few degrees.
Thank goodness. Yeah, once the sun goes down, at least it's slightly less hot, although the humidity is pretty much the same.
Unfortunately, I have a new costume where I start with a ski suit on.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a bad combination.
So, if anybody's listening and they don't know what Singapore's like, it's pretty much on the equator, so it's really hot, really humid, and you were wearing a ski suit at the start of your costume, at the start of your show.
Yep. Luckily, like, I'm 10 minutes into my show. I do a strip tease, and then I have some short shorts on and a tank top. So it felt so good when I got to that point of my show. I could just take it off and be like, that's much better.
Same thing for me. When I was in Singapore, my costumes always fell off halfway through the show, and that was why, because it was too hot.
Yeah, people told me it was hot there, but I didn't realize, you know, how hot, and is the humidity too, you know?
Exactly, yeah, it's not only is it hot, but it's so humid that everything just is covered with sweat. Yeah, you can't stop sweating, everything's wet and moist and slippy.
Yeah, but people are used to it there, you know, they still, we had good crowds and they stay and watch, you know, a lot of places I go, and if it's too hot, people don't want to stand in the sun and watch a show because it's just kind of miserable. But they must be used to it there because they stayed and watched and still had fun.
So yeah, I agree. I think Singapore was some of the best audience I've ever had in the whole world. Lovely people, stay and watch. They'd laugh, they'd clap. They wouldn't heckle or get in the way there. But that, good crowd. So I liked it there.
Yeah, they were good. You're right. And they speak English, which is a bonus.
yeah. So you're from the US originally, yeah?
Yeah, originally from Minnesota. Oh. And I lived there for, I don't know, 27 years of my life.
I like your senator. I like your senator in Minnesota.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think I was listening to a podcast with Mark Maron. I think he was interviewing your isn't your senator the guy who used to be in Saturday Night Live? Or am I totally, does that mean Minneapolis? I can't remember. Anyway, I might have to edit this out. I'm just totally going off at a total tangent there. I'm sorry about that.
That's fine.
Okay, so, Jamie Mossengren.
Then I moved from Minnesota to California. I lived in California for a couple years. And then I moved to Australia, to Sydney, and I lived there for 5 years.
Ah, okay.
And that's where I developed my show and started really performing. I kind of started in California, and then...
So you're 10 years old when you first started unicycling, is that right, about 10 years old?
Yep, I was about 10 when I first started, and just got hooked, you know, got that fun feeling.
Me too, yeah.
Doing something weird and cool and fun and haven't stopped since.
What inspired you to have a go at the unicycle?
My grandma bought one at a garage sale.
Brilliant.
Like a yard sale, and she lived kind of on a farm in a small town in Minnesota, and so my brother and I would go visit, you know, on family trips, and we'd be bored, you know, we'd just be like, oh, there's nothing to do here.
Yeah.
And so one day we showed up and she had a unicycle, and we're like, oh, let's see if we can learn this. So every time we'd go visit her, we'd spend a couple hours trying to ride it and see if we could go the farthest, and eventually we both learned how to ride it around the block, and then I heard of the Twin City Unicycle Club, which is a big club in Minnesota.
Yep, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I joined the club and started practicing a lot more, and started going to nationals and internationals and. Yeah, so that's thanks to my grandma. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Your grandma bought a unicycle. You and your brother have a go. You're in Minnesota. It's got a very, very famous, for unicyclists, a very famous unicycling club. So you get involved. You start going to conventions. You're just hooked. It's your main hobby, right, from then on?
Exactly, yep. Yeah, I loved it and still do.
What unicorns have you been to? All of them since 1990-something.
I'm actually the third person that's been to the most unicorns. I think there's two other people that have been to more than me, but my first one was in 1994.
Okay.
And I haven't missed one since.
Okay. Well, I must have seen you in person because I went to 1996 in Reading in England, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I went to 2004 when it was in Japan. So
cool.
I've probably got videos of you.
Yeah, I'm sure we've ran into each other. It's crazy.
Wow. So, cool. When did you realize you were a really good unicyclist? Because you're amazing. I was looking at your videos.
Since I've been competing for a long time, I just started winning some competitions, and I guess that kind of showed that I was relatively
Are you a 7-time world champion? Is that right?
In a bunch of different disciplines.
Wow. Yeah, I remember learning to unicycle, and I was the president of the juggling club at university. I wasn't really that good at juggling, I realized quite quickly. But then I had a unicycle, and I learned that really fast, and I really, really loved it. But I'm not enough of a gymnast to do anything too complicated on the unicycle. So I'm really impressed by what you do.
Many, many hours on one wheel, so I have lots and lots of time and lots of practice.
Any turning points? How did you go from it being a hobby to making the huge decision that it's going to be your professional career?
It's kind of a funny story. I actually went to college and got a degree in mechanical engineering.
Okay.
And got my degree, got a good job working at a medical company in Minnesota, and I did that for 4 years, and after 4 years, it just felt like jail to me. I was just stuck inside this cubicle, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. In the U.S., you only get like 2-3 weeks of vacation a year. And I like to travel, and all my vacation was used to go to Unicon or Nationals, so I didn't have any other spare time to, you know, go on vacation, and I just felt trapped. So I just randomly quit one day and moved to California with a few friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a plan. I was just had some part-time jobs working at a movie theater and grocery store, and you know, learning to surf and just kind of living life as is. And then I saw a street performer in Venice Beach. And he was kind of doing his thing, kind of juggling, and did like a 20-minute show. And I kind of watched when he collected his money because I was curious how much he made.
Yeah.
I kind of added it up in my head, and I'm like, oh, that's actually decent money if you do a couple of shows a day. That's good money.
Yeah. So what did you start through busking, through street performing then?
Yep. So then, of course I had the skills, the unicycle tricks and juggling stuff, but I didn't know how to do a show. Like, I thought it would be easy, and I went out my first day on the streets and I made like $2 in an hour. And I was just like, I was working so hard, I was sweating, I was doing all my hard tricks, you know, and it just wasn't working. And I was pretty much packing up and giving up. I'm like, okay, this isn't going to work for me. And an old lady came up and gave me a $20 bill.
Ah.
And she's like, I've been sitting over there watching you. You're really good. You know, keep doing what you love. And if it wasn't for her, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, wow.
Then a light bulb kind of went off. I'm like, okay, maybe I can make this work. And so then I just, you know, kept working on my show and learned it's not really what you do, but how you do it. And you have to connect with the audience and, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, I think.
You know, make them laugh. And, you know, there's a formula for it. But, yeah, you got to build a crowd and keep them and use comedy.
Yeah, I guess you realize pretty quick that sometimes the most difficult tricks aren't the ones the audience claps for the most.
True, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I toned my, you know, I took out all my really hard tricks because it's not worth doing them if the audience doesn't appreciate it.
Yeah.
Plus, if there's a chance of you falling, that's not good either. So
yes.
I just you know, cut back a lot of the tricks and worked on my performing skills.
Okay.
And, you know, I would watch other street performers and see kind of what they did to, you know, get a crowd and keep them and learn from them. And then after about a year, I could finally support myself and could quit all the other part-time jobs I had. And then that was about 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've been full-time ever since.
Okay, so when you say you could support yourself after a year, was that still from just busking and street performing, or were you getting some contracted paid shows?
Yeah, the first year or two was mainly just solely street performing.
Ah.
And then when I moved to Australia shortly after that, and again, that was mainly just street performing for the first couple years, and then I started doing fairs and festivals.
Okay, just let me stop you for a second. So, Australia is so far from Venice Beach, California. What made you decide to go to Australia?
I actually met someone that was from Australia, and so we got married, and she got a job back in Sydney, so we decided to move there, which was perfect for me because Sydney is one of the, I don't know if it's the best, but it's a decent place to street perform.
Yeah.
Even though the crowds can be tough, it makes your show a lot better and a lot stronger.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's a good place to go if you want to work on a show and figure out what works and doesn't work. So that's how I ended up there.
Yeah, I understand that totally. I had a similar situation for myself. I got married. My wife wanted to move from Singapore to Hong Kong. So I did a bit of research and found there was a viable market in Hong Kong, similar to the market I was working in Singapore. So, yeah, go for it. And I enjoyed it very much, changing the country. It just revitalized my show.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved Sydney. I moved back to the U.S. 2 years ago, but now I'm thinking of maybe moving back there again because it's beautiful.
Okay. So you're street performing, and then you start getting, did you say, festivals and fairs. How did you start getting those paid contracted shows?
I would just, when I wasn't working, say it was a rain day or, you know, the weather wasn't good or, you know, it was during the week when it's not quite as good to be out there on the streets, I would just go online and research different festivals and fairs and, you know, send them my info and photos and then I eventually started getting a few here and there and then kind of word of mouth spreads eventually and, you know, maybe someone saw you at a fair and they contact you and want you at their fair I do spend a lot of time on my laptop just, you know, sending out emails and contacting different things that I find out about.
Okay, that sounds, I understand that totally, yeah. And let's talk about some of the different things you got. I guess you got some roaming events where you're off stage.
Right.
And how
would I don't do a lot of those. I don't really like doing roaming.
I was going to ask you about that because one of your specialties is you've got a massive, massive unicycle that you can get on top of. And I want to ask you soon how you on earth you climb up that thing. But I guess that wouldn't be much good for roaming because it's just too dangerous, is it? Kids running around.
I have done it on that, but it's a bit too dangerous I just don't like roaming. I much prefer doing a show where people are laughing and, you know, time goes by a lot faster when I'm doing shows. When I'm doing like an hour of roving, it's just like
I'm looking
at my watch the whole time. I'm like, am I done yet? So, you know, so I'll do it if I need to, but I try to convince places that a show would be better. And usually once they see you know, a show, they're like, yeah, a show is better.
Mm. So what would you do? Say they call you and they say, oh, we want you to go roaming around our festival, and what do you say? You say, maybe it would be better if I did a stage show.
Yeah, I basically try to convince them, like, I can do that if that's what you want or need, but I can almost guarantee you that a street show would be better, where I just set up at an intersection or, you know, somewhere on the fairgrounds and do just a show, and it doesn't even have to have, like, a specific time, you know,
right.
A lot of shows, like, they want, like, okay, 7 o'clock, you're on this stage.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works better just to have a street show where it's just, like, you get people walking by and they don't have to try to run and rush and get to the start of the show time, and you just, you know, get people walking by, and that's what I prefer, just doing, like, a real street show in, you know, an atmosphere like that. It's weird. For some reason, if you're on a stage, it's a different feel of a show. Like, even if it's just, like, a foot high, and it's a stage, like, you get this different energy and this different, it's hard to explain, but if you're on the street, you feel more connected with the people. And, I much prefer doing a street show, even if it's a paid gig and I don't have to collect donations.
Yeah.
I still like the street show kind of atmosphere and setup, where anyone walking by just watches it and they don't come to you specifically. I like it more.
And so I guess you don't do a lot of corporate shows and corporate functions at the moment.
Yeah, I think I just like, you know, people of all ages, and, you know, there's nothing against corporations and stuff, but they're a different thing, and, you know, maybe someday I'll get more into that, because I know the money's okay, you know, pretty good in it, and, you know, they're pretty easy, but, yeah, I don't know. One of these days I might try to go there, you know, switch it up.
All right. Let's talk about one of your current street shows, bit by bit. I really like to get, like, the real details here. How do you transport all your equipment to get to the event where you're going to do your street show? Because you've got a massive unicycle.
Surprisingly, I can fit. I had a custom-built 12-foot unicycle.
Yeah.
And it's it comes apart and fits in a normal suitcase.
Wow.
And it doesn't weigh that much, so I can put that in a suitcase with a lot of other gear. And then I have another suitcase with my small unicycle and all my clothes. And then I have a carry-on that I put my sound system in.
Mm.
And so with two suitcases and a carry-on, I can fit everything I need for a week or two.
Yeah. Okay.
And the funny part is when I'm going, you know, say I'm somewhere and I have all my stuff, and I can actually ride my small unicycle while pushing my 12-foot unicycle and pulling my suitcase, so that's how I get to the actual pitch. Ride my unicycle, so it's kind of like a funny little app just getting to the place I perform.
And what's your favorite kind of transport? Buses, trains, planes, taxis, depending on how far you're going to travel?
I prefer just having my own car my own vehicle where I can just, you know, pack everything in. And
what kind of sound system do you carry with you?
I have a AER amp, so it's a compact 60 watts, and I love it. Yeah, it has a really good sound. It's a bit heavy, but it's worth it. And I've never had any issues with it, and it's super loud, super nice.
Do you use music in your shows?
Yeah, I use a little music to start, and throughout some jokes and stuff, I use some music, and it's mainly talking, but I do I do use, have an iPod, and I use some music.
iPod, yeah.
As mainly talking.
How do you cue your music? Did you just bend down, switch on the iPod when you need it?
I used to, for years, I did that, and then eventually I bought like a $10 remote on eBay.
Yes.
Where I can plug it into my iPod, and it's amazing how much better the show is when I don't have to, like, stop. And, like, you know, I don't lose audience people when I switch music now. You know, I can control the volume, so, you know, if I want something louder, I just click the button and pause it when I need to. And,
perfect.
Yeah, the remote is, it's only $10, too. I can't believe I didn't do it 2 years earlier. I'm like, what was I waiting for?
yeah, sometimes just the technology's there and you just don't realize how good it is.
Yeah.
What kind of microphone do you use?
How cheap it is, too.
And how cheap it is, yeah. What kind of mic do you use? Is it a headset mic you prefer?
Yeah, I use the Sennheiser ME3, I think it is, for the mic. And then I have the wireless Sennheiser body packs. Forget what they are, but yeah, they're the Sennheiser body packs, and yeah, they work good because you just use two AA batteries in the transmitter and two AA batteries in the receiver, and I use rechargeable batteries, so they last like a year, and yeah, I love it. It's
great.
A really good system. I mean, they break occasionally, but you know, they pay for themselves in no time.
Yeah. Do you, I see one of your costumes is a jester costume. Do you find that sometimes all the tassels or the jester hat get in the way of the microphone or the juggling?
Not really, not in that costume. Although that's one costume I don't really wear that much because I'm not a big fan of clowns.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm just, you know, even though I unicycle, I don't know, I've always been afraid of clowns, I think, and I've just never, yes, I try to not use that as much unless it's like a, you know, Shakespeare event where they want to, me to fit in, or, you know, sometimes I've done like roving with it, but especially if I juggle fire, it's not a good costume to use because it's very big and baggy and stuff, so...
Yeah, do you find, when you pick your costume, because your main act is a unicyclist, are there any particular things you found, like the pants, you've got to make sure they don't ever get caught in the unicycle between the forks and the wheel, things like that?
Yeah, they do, I tend to pick my costumes so they're, more tight on me,
yeah.
So they're not as loose if I can, and, especially when I unicycle, I have really long legs, and most costumes, if I sit on the seat, my pants will go up to my knees, so I gotta make sure that they're long in the legs, and not too big.
Yeah. Have you ever had clients who've made you wear a costume for an event that's really hard to unicycle in?
No, not yet.
Lucky.
Not yet.
Good.
Yeah, usually I bring my own costume, so I know what's going to work. I don't think I've had an event where they've provided me with the costume, so that's good, I guess.
Yeah. You say you're not really into clowns, so what is your persona on stage? Is it similar to your off-stage persona?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm very easygoing, and I'm from Minnesota, and they call it Minnesota Nice, where you... Yeah, you're just like a very humble person, and you just, I'm not, like a lot of performers are really loud and aggressive, and, a lot of people tell me after my shows, like, oh, wow, that's really cool, different show, because I'm just kind of laid back on, and, you know, I kind of have this Fargo accent, where I'm like, oh, yeah, don't you know, just, you know, kind of laid back, and, so, yeah, same when I'm on stage. You know, I don't really change into a different character. I'm just kind of myself. And, it seems to work out pretty good.
Now, if you're doing a street show, starting's so important, attracting the crowd. How do you start your shows?
So I actually have a easy way to start my show is because I have such a big, tall unicycle.
Mm.
I just throw on some music, start talking, and I start, like, double-checking to make sure I put together the tall unicycle correctly. So I stand it up and,
yeah.
you know, I check bolts and nuts and the chain. And as soon as that's standing upright, you know, it, people can see it from a long distance away and they hear me talking. And that is a good way to attract
yeah.
people.
Yeah, I imagine it's huge. Is it 12 foot high?
12 feet, yeah.
Wow, that's a great, that's a huge one.
Yeah, it's big. And it's funny, I've always just ridden a 12 foot. Just growing up, we used to do a lot of parades in Minnesota, yeah. and I just always, you know, I worked my way up to, you know, 8 foot, then 10 foot, and then I rode a 12 foot for years, And so, of course, when I started doing shows, I'm like, well, I'm going to ride a 12-foot because that's what I ride.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like I wanted to get the attention and get, like, be the tallest and whatever.
But
it's just kind of...
But I can see it's such a great way to start the show, just putting together this, checking this huge 12-foot contraption.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to attract a crowd.
Yep, and it works good. It's kind of the easy way out, though. I don't have to, like... You know, most street performers have to work for the crowd
yeah.
and get their crowd the hard way, where I kind of get the easy way out. But, yeah, it seems to do the job.
Do you have any volunteers in your show? I think you bunny hop over a kid or something like that in your show, is that right?
Yep, yeah, I get a small kid to help. I jump over her on the small one, just, you know, jump over her legs, and then, I get the small kid to throw up a club.
Okay.
To me once I'm up there. And then I also get 4 or 5 guys to help hold the tall unicycle so I can climb up and they let go.
Let's get into this. This is great. I mean, this is what I want to hear about. Is this the finale? It must be the finale, surely, your 12-foot unicycle.
Yep.
Okay. So when you're choosing a venue, the venue's got to be big enough to accommodate this 12-foot unicycle.
Yeah.
And I've noticed on some of your videos, often there's a handy tree or a lamppost somewhere nearby. Is that something you look out for?
You know, I used to always have to use a pole or a building or, you know, a tree or something nearby to get on, just because I wanted that extra support
yeah.
once I got on there is for something to grab onto. But I was running into too many festivals, affairs, and places where I'd get there and there would be nothing.
Yes,
and I'd
yes.
be kind of stuck. I'd be like, well, this isn't going to work because I can't use anything. And then I'm like, there's got to be a different way. So I just about 2 years ago, I figured out I can do it in the middle of nowhere as long as I bring a portable pole with me.
Yeah.
So I have this little, it's actually like a tent pole that mm-hmm. snaps together and is 12 feet. So then I get a guy to hold that. So once I get up there, I have something to hang on to.
Yes.
And now I can pretty much perform wherever, you know, in the middle of a field or
even on
it works a lot better because number one it looks a lot scarier.
Yes.
And well, it is
it
but,
looks so scary. My goodness, people watching this, look at the videos, it's amazing. It's so high.
Yeah, it looks a lot better and I'm not limited anymore, which is really nice.
Are you limited at all by the surface? I guess you've got, when I ride a unicycle, sometimes I find I'm in a field and it's just too bumpy to do much.
Right, yeah, that is the one limitation, I guess. Well, the two limitations right now is a ceiling height, so if it's indoors or whatever, it's got to be, you know, at least 14 or 15 feet high for me.
Mm.
But the other thing is the surface has to be like a smooth, flat surface.
Yeah.
I've ridden it a few times on grass, but I I don't like that, and I try to avoid anything in fields or anywhere the surface is too. Even I can do cobblestone or bricks, as long as it's not too bad. But sometimes, you know, certain places they can be pretty bumpy up there, and I don't like risking it if it's not good conditions.
Yeah. And how do you mount this monster? Let me see. You must have a couple of volunteers holding the unicycle.
Yep. So I get four guys to hold the unicycle, and then I get another guy to hold the pole, and then I climb up, and then grab the pole, and then I count to three, and the four guys holding the unicycle run away, and I'm still hanging onto the pole. And then eventually, I get the guy holding the pole to, you know, I let go of the pole and he moves away.
Wow. And this is the limits of my knowledge, because I worked in places like Singapore, where pretty much in the 1990s, I was the only person who had a giraffe unicycle. So I don't know much about a 12-foot unicycle. You must have a step halfway up the stem of the unicycle. Is that standard to get on the 12-inch?
Yeah, I actually have I think four steps on the back of it. So, four steps on the back of it. So it's kind of like a mini ladder.
So people are picturing this. You've got this huge pole of the unicycle stem and the little steps for you to climb up. Wow. Tricky.
Yeah, pretty crazy, but it's fun.
And you juggle with fire normally on top of it. How have you find the restrictions on fire? Have you run into problems with different countries and different places?
Yeah, I do run into problems here and there. Most of the time, I'll use fire until I get told I can't. Usually, you know, if you go somewhere new and you just act dumb and you're like, oh, really? I can't use fire? And usually it's best to, you know, usually if you do it that way, you can get away with it most places.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I do get in trouble, I'll just say sorry.
Yes.
And then I will juggle two knives instead of a torch.
What fuel what's your favorite fuel for juggling fire?
I actually like using lighter fluid.
Yes, I like that.
It's easy, it's cheap, you can find it, at least in the U.S. Some countries I have a problem finding it, but it's cheap, it doesn't really smell, it doesn't, I think it burns good. And
I think it drips quite a lot, though. I thought lighter fluid did drip a fair amount.
Yeah, as long as you don't put too much on, or shake them out, I haven't had too much of an issue with dripping, but yeah, that's what I prefer. When I'm in Australia, I use low-odor kerosene.
Yes, yeah.
Which, that works good too, but it's still a bit stinky.
Yeah. How do you deal with the dirt? Because when you finish fire juggling, there's you know, you've got the filthy black heads of the fire club. Do you just wrap them up, keep them somewhere, try not to get everything else dirty?
Yeah, I have like a little bag I put them in.
Yeah.
And you know, it does suck because your hands get dirty all the time, and especially my new costume. I started out with a white jumpsuit, like a ski suit. And it's so hard to keep that thing clean, especially working on the streets and with fire and everything. So I have to wash it a lot to keep it bright white.
Do you have a favorite part of your show?
Oh, that's a good question.
Maybe it's all so good you love all of it.
Yeah, I don't know if I do have a favorite part because every show is different, and you know, sometimes a joke works better. I guess my favorite part is whenever I get the biggest laugh. You know, it's just you get that energy from the audience, and it makes you feel good when you're getting that feedback. And you know, some of the best parts is doing just random stuff, like something like not normal will happen, and you'll say something or do something that gets a good laugh off the top of your head, and just like those are kind of the moments that
Great. That was my next question. Do you like to improvise? That was my next question. Do you like to improvise in your show? I guess you do. You love those new moments that just happen.
Yeah, I do. I don't do it a lot. It's mainly when something weird happens, you know, in a show, and you have to try to, you know, recover or do something.
Do you prefer? I've seen that sometimes, maybe in the past, you worked in a two-person show. You had a female fire spinner on some of your videos. So have you enjoyed doing two people?
That was my ex from Australia.
Okay.
And she started out as part of my show, and then she got a bigger and better job, so she started doing that instead. But what was your question?
My question was, do you prefer doing solo shows or two-person shows?
You know, they're both fun. It's kind of a tricky situation though, because if you have two people, it's not like you're making twice as much.
Yes.
So
yes.
You know, I prefer doing two-person shows because it's easier and you have to do less and you can feed off of each other and have fun doing it, but you might make a little bit more but not twice as much. So
yeah, I have the same situation here. A two-person show, I like doing it, but yeah, you're not going to make as much money individually as you do doing a solo show, and if it's your job, that's an important thing because you've got to pay the rent.
Right. And my new girlfriend is a unicyclist, so she's starting to come and be part of my show, which is awesome because I'm getting to teach her the tricks of the trade, and so that's really fun and exciting. And then eventually, I think we'll both have like two separate shows where we can hopefully travel together and still perform, but separately, so we're making more individually.
Mm.
So that makes sense.
It does. It does make sense. I like that idea. That's a great idea. And that's a good place to get to in this podcast. So I was going to ask you, how do you see your future? And I guess that's one of the possibilities, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I want to perform, you know, keep performing as long as I can, or until I get sick of it. I don't know if I will, because it's been 8 years and I'm still loving it, and you know, I try to change things up and stuff, so it's new and fresh every now and then. But yeah, that's my goal, is to kind of keep doing what I'm doing. If for some reason I get bored or I get injured or, you know, something happens where I can't physically perform, then I thought about maybe being a teacher at a circus school.
Yes.
You know, some type of teaching, unicycling or performing.
I think that's a really important point. You've got to have some kind of backup plan, because you might have an accident and you might not be physically capable of riding the unicycle. And also, just in general, as the decades roll by, the body's going to get more and more tired climbing up a 12-foot monster of a unicycle.
Right.
So you have to think ahead. I'm glad that you got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, and if if the teaching doesn't work out for some reason, I could go back to engineering. I don't think I would, because I don't really want to do that again. But my third plan is to open up like a coffee shop or a brewery somewhere, and you know that's like my
why not. All right.
I just want to get into the entertainment business. I would do something like that. But I think, I hope I can perform for as long as I can, and then just teach people what I love doing.
Well, that's amazing. So people, check Jamie out. Let's see. Your website is uniproshow.com.
Yeah, uniproshow.com. Yeah, it might be easier if you just Google the Unicycling Unicorn.
That's right.
That's my new show. And that's, it's a bit silly, but it's fun.
It's fantastic.
Unicorns, rainbows, and all that crazy stuff.
Brilliant. Jamie, it's really good talking to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me, man.